Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today for a panel discussion around alternative investing and the Yield Street Prism Fund. In case we haven't met before, my name is Peter Kerr, and I'm the Director of Product Marketing here at Yield Street. I'm joined today by three members of the Yield Street Prism Fund's Board of Directors, John Siciliano, Bill Regal, and Jim Jesse. John, Bill, Jim, thanks so much for joining us today. So let me first start with just a quick overview of the Yield Street Prism Fund. The fund provides access to multiple alternative asset classes in a single investment. Currently, the fund has investments in seven asset classes, including real estate, art finance, and legal finance, as well as many others. The fund currently offers an 8% distribution rate that is paid quarterly and is open to all investors, regardless of your accreditation status, and with investment minimums of only $1,000 initially. Feel free to head to www.yieldstreetprismfund.com to learn more about the fund during our conversation. And with that, John, perhaps you could begin by introducing yourself and give us a quick overview of your background.
Great, Peter. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, as I know Jim and Bill do. To me, the Prism Fund is an interesting opportunity to participate in the democratization of alternative products. I think what we've seen over the last number of years in the industry is an opportunity to invest, a lack of opportunity to invest in alternatives products at other than a large institutional level. And what you've begun to see over time is the opening of by a number of firms, including folks like Apollo and Blackstone and KKR, of products that are designed to allow greater participation. But I think what the Prism Fund has done that is ahead of its time in many ways is allow a direct to investor platform, which is one of the things that really interested me. Because my background has been historically in institutional asset management. I originally was on the distribution side for a firm that some of you may know called Dimensional Fund Advisors, which was basically what one would call an enhanced index firm that started in the 80s and still is around today and very successful at over half a trillion. I was CEO of New York Life's investment management business and then spent a number of years at PricewaterhouseCoopers overseeing global strategy and asset and wealth management. So with my background, I find this type of a platform and product to be very interesting. And I think we all work hard at making sure that we're doing all the right things on behalf of our shareholders. So let me stop there and turn it over to Jim.
Thanks, John. Good afternoon, everyone. Happy to be part of the webinar today. So I spent 32 years of my career at a traditional mutual fund company, actually the oldest in America, based up in Boston, called MFS. Held a variety of different roles, but it was traditional stock funds, bond funds, global, et cetera. As John has indicated, I think the idea of the growth of the alternative space and the fact that now with vehicles like the Prism Fund that are available for smaller investors and not just the big institutions that, that John was mentioning makes it very attractive. I retired about 3 years ago and serve on this board as well as a couple of others in the industry, as well as doing some nonprofit work. So Bill, let me throw it over to you.
Thank you, Jim, very much. My name is Bill Regal. I was until 2017 the Chief Investment Officer for TIAA, the insurance company's asset management division. As the chief investment officer, I oversaw all the investment functions, both on the equity fixed income side and more importantly on the alternative side. TIAA has a very robust investment platform that has over the years taken advantage of alternatives like the ones that the Prism Fund utilizes. And it was in my capacity as the chief investment officer that I really came to appreciate what those assets can do for a portfolio over time. Certainly, it was a great benefit for TIAA. And from what I've seen at the Prism Fund, they have a very, very robust staff. And it was one of the reasons that I was very interested in joining as a director. So at this point, I'll turn it back to Peter.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe just, you know, John, if you could quickly just give our webinar attendees an understanding of what role the board does and really what the board is.
The three of us represent the shareholders or the investors' interests, and we are objective and unaffiliated with Yield Street. In other words, we're not on Yield Street's payroll. We are on the fund's payroll, and we are basically working at and on behalf of those who've invested in the fund. And what this means is we do not make the actual investment decisions. Rather, Yield Street is what's called advisor to the fund. Advisor is appointed by the board, meaning the three of us, to undertake the ongoing management of the fund, which includes the investment process, monitoring the investments, and overseeing the valuation. It doesn't mean that we aren't in a position quarterly where we have to accept or reject what is presented to us, but it means that we are really sitting there on behalf of the investors, trying to represent their interests as best we can.
If I could add to that, to me, that's one of the really attractive features is the governance structure you have. The U.S. mutual fund industry basically came into being in 1940 with the Investment Company Act of 1940. And one of the really important features was that a fund need to have independent trustees doing exactly what John outlined. And I think it's why the mutual fund industry in general in this country has grown, done very well, is that there is a good structure of oversight to protect the people who are invested in the product.
I would add that, you know, John talked briefly about this, about the investment aspect of the process. I think it's important to underscore that one of the key responsibilities we have as we work with management is to make certain that we have a set of investment guidelines in place that govern how the fund is invested and how and where risk is being taken in order to get return.
No, I think that's great color. And you know, I guess maybe just even taking a step back just to talk, you know, since we've already started on the fund, but maybe Bill, you could actually walk us through for those that aren't familiar. We've talked a lot about alternative investments, and certainly people are very familiar with equities and likely bonds or fixed income. But Bill, maybe you can enlighten us on really what are alternatives.
Well, it is one of those catch-all labels that encompass a whole variety of what are basically illiquid investments. And that runs the gamut from real estate to collateralized fixed income to, as people who are familiar with the investments in the Prism Fund, even investments in art as well as in litigation finance. Generally speaking, if you talk to people who study the industry closely, they, I believe, would posit that alternatives as defined should be able to deliver a real return above public equities of between 200 basis points on the low side, that's 2%, to as much as 6 or 8% on the high side. So that's the sort of premium above public equities on a global basis that can be very attractive. Obviously, that comes with some risk, but generally speaking, if you try to control it, it is a great way to augment a diversified portfolio. And one last aspect for alternatives as defined that I think it's important to call out is the fact that generally speaking, the return pattern or the way that those assets earn money over time is less correlated with both equities and fixed income, meaning that they're going to give you that excess return, hopefully in a distributed way that is different than the return pattern that you would see in the public equity market.
Yeah, that's a good point, Bill, because to me, especially with where we are in the traditional equity and bond markets, you know, we're basically at historic highs, more or less, on both sides. And so the diversification aspect that alternatives can bring to somebody's portfolio is very attractive. You tend to find you may own lots of different stocks. However, they kind of move more or less in the same direction. And again, I think for long-term investors, the diversification and the return stream that you represent is a big part of the attractiveness of alternatives.
And, you know, Peter, as both Jim and Bill have referenced, historically, there's been a lack of liquidity in alternatives or multi-asset products. So thinking of real estate, maritime, you know, art financing, et cetera, all things that we're active in. And so what people need to realize is that when you begin to invest at a level directly in these types of securities or through a fund like ours, which invests in these types of investment securities, that liquidity is not like it is, to Jim's point, when you buy a traditional equity or fixed income mutual fund where you typically can get daily liquidity. And here we talk about yearly liquidity. And even at that, we're not offering everybody not necessarily will everybody be offered liquidity every year who wants it. And the reason this is important for people to understand is because you disadvantage people who don't want liquidity if you accept too many people trying to exit the fund at one time. What that does is it disadvantages those who stay in the fund because it can impact the price negatively. So going into this kind of a fund, it's a great opportunity to get access to products that you might not otherwise get access to. But one needs to be aware that there are different characteristics here than in a traditional 1940 Act mutual fund.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you think about constructing a fund, right, and you were to put maybe some more private and illiquid assets in it, in order to offer something along the lines of more frequent liquidity, you'd have to have really a very large cash buffer, which also can unfortunately cause a little bit of a cash drag within an investment vehicle like this. So one of the ways, obviously, that funds similar to Prism and Prism as well is by offering these quarterly tender offers, essentially, for a portion of your shares that you're able to try to tender to exit the fund.
Now you're getting almost zero return. So you're right, it is a big drag if you have to hold too much to make the liquidity.
And to that point, I mean, traditionally, when you think about constructing a portfolio, you know, a lot of people are, you know, thinking about the traditional 60-40 model, right? And there's been a lot of discussion in the industry about what is the new 60-40. But traditionally, when, you know, Fed funds was at roughly 5% or so, or, you know, let's say the 10-year treasury was yielding 5% or more pre-global financial crisis, those were really attractive returns that tended to be very uncorrelated to equities, right? And now all of a sudden, with the 10-year trading at about 1.5, I think earlier today, Fed funds at zero, that attractiveness, you know, is a little bit less maybe than it has in the past. So maybe, Jim, you could kind of walk us through, you know, how one could think about using alternatives in the portfolio in this kind of new 60-40 concept.
Again, it's all about having the right allocation based on the individual's risk tolerance. A lot of that's going to be predicated about the age of the investor, the time horizon they have. And generally, the theory being the more time you have, you can be more on the aggressive side. But to me, as I think about it, and you're right, Pete, the 60-40 modeling was done in an entirely different fixed income and environment. And, you know, I think now you hear many times people say the alternative side very well could be 15, 20, 25% portfolios. What you find with the large institutions, particularly endowment accounts at the major universities, many of them are very heavily involved in alternatives because they have basically an endless time horizon. So again, it's hard to make blanket statements. And it's not wise because everybody's situation is different. But I do think it can provide a nice potential increase to the return and also give the diversification benefit for a long-term investor.
And so, John, you know, we heard your story for why you joined the Prism board. But Jim and Bill, maybe you could expand on how come you all chose to join the board.
Bill, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I mentioned it briefly. I became enamored or appreciative of what alternatives can do for a portfolio and for investors generally. in my time working at Teachers Insurance. As I suggested, a very substantial portion of that company's general account, I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 20%, was allocated to alternatives as defined. And it was a very, very important engine in terms of the overall returns that a company was able to generate on behalf of the participants, who generally speaking were looking for support in fixed annuities. And so when Prism approached me after I left TIA in retirement about joining the board, I sat down and I talked to obviously the founders and some of the investment staff and was immediately struck by how capable and experienced they were as they went about their respective tasks in each of the various verticals. And so that, I think, was one of the things that really sold me, first of all, on Prism as an investment, and secondarily, on joining as an independent board member in an oversight role, which is, you know, a decision that is not easy in this day and age, because you obviously have to be very careful about who is managing money on others' behalf. And so taking that watchdog role is not something you do easily. But I had to say that the confidence I developed over time in working with and talking to the investment staff was a very, very important reason why I was willing to put my hand up and take advantage of what has been a very interesting investment opportunity and very interesting business opportunity as they expand the fund and expand their platform at Yield Street.
Yeah, Pete, I guess I would say on my side, during my career, I worked very closely with the fund trustees at MFS. I would meet with them 6-7 times a year. And I really saw the importance of that role and the fiduciary aspect on behalf of the shareholders. So I think it's one of the great features of the mutual fund industry, and thought that it would be a good way for me to stay connected, even though I was retiring. Like Bill said, we all met with the founders and the senior management firm. Their backgrounds are very impressive. I thought it was also very interesting that they had gone an approach of going direct to the investor through the digital platform. So many of these other vehicles, you typically are going through a traditional advisor, and there's costs associated with that. So I like the idea that that we would be going directly to the public, and also do it in a vehicle that you didn't have to be an accredited investor. The traditional alternative space, you need a net worth of at least $1 million, annual income of $200,000 to $300,000, depending whether you're filing a joint return. And to me, one of the great things with Prism is that for as little as $1,000, somebody can get it to take advantage of it. So that's kind of what I was looking at.
Yeah, and Jim, you mentioned your background at MFS, particularly in distribution. And I know, you know, it was kind of briefly touched upon earlier, but how has the distribution of alternatives kind of changed over the last 10 or 15 years or so?
Well, there's definitely the companies that John referred to in his opening comments, the big players in the space have definitely seen that the way their path to continue to grow is to go to individuals. But the way that they're accessing it typically, for the most part, is through going through the broker-dealer firms. So it's going to be an advisor with his or her clients offering them. But you're seeing a lot more product come to the market. And, I do believe we're only scratching the surface of the potential there. But there's definitely more and more things that are being offered, but not so much going digitally directly to the fund company.
That's great. So, John, I was wondering maybe if you could also, I think it was you that discussed earlier, just talking a little bit more about, sort of daily pricing versus non-daily pricing. With private investments, they don't typically get priced on a daily basis. Could you maybe walk us through, generally not specific to the fund, but sort of how pricing does work in private investments?
Well, basically, we have Yield Street has a process whereby the public securities, because there are certain preferreds that are held in the fund, so that cash that's not invested in the specified areas of focus for the fund is at least in a yielding investment. Those typically price daily on an exchange. That's the easy part. The harder part is when you are investing in some of the other things that the fund invests in, such as getting back to ARC financing or real estate. These need to be priced on a quarterly basis. And that happens with a couple of parties involved. For one thing, Yield Street itself, as a sub-advisor, has a pricing committee and a way of evaluating it at the end of every quarter, in addition to which there's a third-party firm that advises the board that is a valuation firm. So they review the material that Yield Street provides. And so that is basically the best way that we know of, and it conforms to what is, I would characterize, is traditional from a regulatory requirement perspective, in order that one can come up with a value quarterly that is, in everybody's view, the best value overall. Now, the next thing you should ask then is, okay, but this is a rolling offering in the sense that, you know, we're taking on new investors in small amounts every week. So any variation in that price week to week is going to be pretty much dependent on the public securities, the preferreds that I mentioned, changing in value. Now, the preferreds really don't change much in value because they're more like debt instruments. But in this market environment where there's still a lot of volatility around interest rates and interest rate expectations, the preferreds have tended to move around a little bit more than they might have historically. Does that answer, Peter?
Yeah, and I mean, that also, I think, brings a lot of light to one of the questions we get asked most often at Yield Street around the Prism Fund, which is how come the NAV seems to move? And I think, right, to your point, one portion of that is while some of these investments do get priced on a quarterly basis, which might not cause a lot of intra-quarter price volatility, there are some other market securities that do get priced on a much more frequent basis, which can cause changes to the NAV. And then, of course, there are distributions that do happen on a quarterly basis that also do cause a proportional decline in the NAV as that distribution is paid out in cash. And then so, you know, Bill, I know we were kind of talking about some market expectations. You know, I think it was discussed earlier that valuations for equities are, you know, a little bit more elevated than maybe they traditionally have been. So I was wondering if you could provide, you know, any insight, given your background as the CIO of TIA, with, you know, how people can think about, you know, equity valuations at this point in time.
Well, generally speaking, as the value of securities rises relative to the earnings stream, you get an increase in what's called the price earnings multiple, or PE ratio. And there's been a lot of work been done over time, in particular by one professor at Yale who's very well known, who posited or estimated what equity returns could be over a forward-looking 10-plus year period based on the rolling averages of price earnings multiples for equities. And what that work shows is that the higher that price earnings multiple is, meaning the higher the valuation, the less the expected return can be over time. That doesn't mean that equities will return zero, but it does mean that if the average expected return in real levels is on historically, let's say, 6 to 8% in the United States, there are some at this point in time, I believe, who look at current valuations, which are quite high relative to history, and have much lower expected return numbers. So there are figures that I've seen as low as 3 or 4 on the, in real terms to 5%. So that doesn't mean equities are necessarily going to deliver negative returns. In my career, valuation in and of itself was never a signal to sell equities. But if you have a very long-term time frame, which I would encourage all investors to have as they approach these markets, on average, you should expect U.S. equities to generate far less of a return over the next 10 years than we've seen over the previous 10. So that, you know, to segue into the next area of the discussion, that makes the sort of premium that alternatives can provide that much more interesting and valuable. Particularly if it occurs in a uncorrelated or in a way that does not relate to the way that equities behave.
Well, and then if you jump over to the fixed income side, and Pete made reference to this earlier, the rates are so low, especially if you're buying U.S. government securities. I mean, I remember when I came in the business back in the mid-80s, 30-year treasury, at times you're getting 15, 16%. I remember people would tell me they'd never buy a municipal bond if it yielded under 10%. so now you fast forward to today, and you got that 10-year treasury, like I said, a little bit under 1.5. 30-year treasury is like 2.2. You know, there's a little rule of thumb in our business about how long or how quickly it takes to double your money, called the rule of 72s. So I was just playing around with it earlier. I figure if you bought a 10-year, if you bought a 30-year treasury, it's going to take you 33 years to double your money. For most people, unless they've already had a lot of money, that's not going to get them to retirement or be able to provide much income in retirement. So I do think it's about trying to figure out what are ways that you can augment returns, get better diversification. It's a challenge, and lots of asset classes going on it, but if you're trying to live off the interest income, there's not much there anymore.
Jim, my background's in fixed income, and I've got another stat for you. I saw the high yield index is yielding 3.5%.
Wow.
Which, you know, these are below investment grade corporations, tend to be fairly large, but just in an overall rating standpoint, these are companies rated, you know, double B or below. And historically, you'd expect to see 5 to 12%, I think, yields, generally speaking, depending on the time frame. But certainly, you know, that was the 10-year treasury, not even 3 years ago. So certainly a different environment to think about.
Yeah. So what's nicely called high yield is also known as junk. Bonds, right? And so you're basically getting very little extra return to be investing in that part of the market. So you're absolutely correct.
Well, I think the other thing too, Peter, which makes your point as well, is that the high yield market in 2008 was about a $300 billion market. Today it's $1.3 trillion. And in interest rate environments like this, people tend to go for the triple C and below, which is, as you know, the riskiest part of the curve. And the one that punishes you the most when the world turns ugly. And so, again, one of the things that's interesting about a fund like Prism or some of these other funds out there that invest in real estate, infrastructure, you know, litigation settlements, art financing, whatever, is they're just giving you, as Bill Riegel talked about a while ago, just true diversification.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot of this, you know, for those that are kind of curious about why this is going on and what it really means, you know, a lot of it is just what's kind of just generally termed the reach for yield, in that, you know, people's liabilities tend to be in fixed dollar terms and not necessarily in percentage terms. So if they had fixed liabilities on an annual basis of $100 and their fixed income portfolio used to give them 50, they had about 50% of that living expense covered. Well, if that, you know, return on that fixed income now is only giving you 25, you've now got this big gap. So what maybe you used to be able to get from an investment grade bond fund or other, you know, now you have to go a little bit further out. And so it certainly does, you know, create a bit of a conundrum for people, and certainly trying to find alternative sources of income can be very attractive and help meet some of those funding gaps.
Investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risk, charges and expenses of the Yield Street Prism Fund before investing. The prospectus for the Yield Street Prism Fund contains this and other information about the fund and can be obtained by emailing investments@yieldstreetprismfund.com or by referring to www.yieldstreetprismfund.com. The prospectus should be read carefully before investing in the fund. Investments in the fund are not bank deposits and thus not insured by the FDIC or by any other federal government agency, and are not guaranteed by Yield Street or any other party. The securities described in the prospectus are not offered for sale in the states of Nebraska or North Dakota, or to persons resident or located in such states. No subscription for the sale of fund shares will be accepted from any person resident or located in Nebraska or North Dakota. The fund's distribution rate reflects the quarterly distribution of 20 cents per share declared by the fund's board of directors on May 13th, 2021, to be paid on September 15th, 2021, to stockholders of record as of September 8th, 2021, and is based on the fund's net asset value of $9.77 per share as of March 31st, 2021. The fund's distribution may exceed its earnings. Therefore, a portion of the fund's distribution may be a return of the money you originally invested and represents a return of capital to you for tax purposes. The Yield Street Prism Fund is a non-diversified closed-end fund for the purposes of the Investment Company Act of 1940 as amended and is therefore not a 1940 Act diversified product.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7 to 10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.